afternoon. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFR Boo, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz here, and I'm so glad that Guelph had the foresight not to cancel Halloween like some other cities and towns in this country. What's with that? We could spend probably a whole half hour talking about that.
I don't usually buy into the whole, like, we're the, like, this nanny state, NIMBY, blah, 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 but it's like, yeah, that's...
I mean, you're from Georgia, you must have Halloweened in the snow at some point, right?
Halloween
the
usually,
wind,
like,
and
there's
the
a
rain,
1 in 2 chance Halloween is going to have lousy weather, and you just adapt by integrating the winter coat into the costume. And I once dressed as a Christmas present, because then you could wear whatever under the box. So
you dress as the penguin and you have an umbrella. Like, it's simple. Right?
Yeah.
This is simple stuff.
Yeah.
Come on, Canadians.
Unfortunately, people didn't come here for costume advice. So we'll move on. Open Sources is CFRU's political current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. So we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. This week, though, it's all news. And we are going to talk about, among other things, Trump. It has been... so long since we talked about Trump.
By God,
the news hasn't stopped, and it certainly didn't stop today.
By the minute, yes.
By the minute. And then the Ontario legislature is back in session, and Doug Ford actually secured a win this week. And it's a new, nicer, friendlier mayor, Doug Ford. We'll see how long that lasts.
Did you say mayor? You did, didn't you?
Oh, premier, Doug Ford?
Premier.
Ugh,
so I heard mayor, but of course, when you hear Ford, you hear both those things, right? So
it's so hard to tell sometimes. First of all, speaking of back from the dead, so Justin Trudeau won re-election with the minority parliament last week. We did 5 hours of coverage about that on election night. And he has gone to see the governor general, Julie Payette, and said that he intends to form government. It is not clear what form that is government's going to look like. It is known that, at least Jagmeet Singh has said, that aside from one brief conversation, Justin Trudeau has not reached out to him. But most people are talking about Andrew Scheer and whether or not he's going to still be around this time next year, at least as the leader of the Conservative Party. And speaking of breaking news, Peter McKay posted a Twitter comment this afternoon that said when he... mentioned yesterday in a panel of some kind that Andrew Scheer did not screw up and miss a wide open net or whatever he said.
You have to use a hockey analogy.
Still,
nobody understands what's going on, right?
He still believes that Scheer is doing a good job and has worked hard. All I hear is like, yeah, just like get the spotlight off me so I can continue to plan my coup. So,
and that's fairly accurate because the first, who was it? I guess it was the Globe. We're speculating almost right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw one article that was even before the election. It was like, well, if Scheer doesn't cut it, who's going to be? And I'm sure Peter McKay doesn't mind all of this being floated. In fact, it's probably being actively encouraged in some circles. I wouldn't say it was amazing how quick, but of course he's doing this whole, who, me? Oh, no, not me. I don't want to be the leader. But in actual fact, we know that that's where the spinola is going. So, that's a battle that's definitely going to take place. One of the predictions before the election was that two of the leaders will be done. I think one is done for Scheer. I think
is done for Scheer.
For Scheer, baby.
Freudian slip.
Scheer is probably definitely done as to when, we don't know. I think Singh is going to survive this round. It depends on how the minority goes and how long it runs. And if he can keep the mojo up, let's say, that he managed to capture during the election. Even though seats were down for the NDP and the wipeout in Quebec, there's still a bit of Singh mania out there, let's call it. I mean, do you think about even, let's go local almost right away. The NDP vote in town was up 1,000 votes. That's really impressive to me. And that's, I don't know how much of that is Singh, how much of that is the quality of our candidate here. It's probably a bit of both, I would imagine. But they're in places NDP were on the up. It wasn't a complete wipeout for them as much as it's being presented in some circles that, oh, it's terrible. Everybody had their wins and losses, right? And of course, the biggest winner and loser at the exact same time was Justin Trudeau and the Liberals.
Well, the question is what kind of comeback might have Singh had if the election was like 2 or 3 weeks longer. I don't know if he could have done like a Trudeau-esque turnaround quite like that. I think all the crap that Scheer's gotten about, like, oh, why couldn't you like shoot on an empty net? I think part of that is also Singh's bag to carry with the NDP as sort of like the natural second choice for the left. There seems to be, though, a cognitive disconnect, too. I mean, there's someone should really do, like, some sort of analysis on, like, the NDP and why, you know, they can't really have this breakthrough, whether that's here in Ontario, whether that's nationally. Is it because they're being anchored by, you know, governments who have perceived to have been bad governments, like in Ontario and Alberta and Manitoba, like over the years? Or is it just like, you know, we're really a two-party system that, unless there's electoral reform, that portion of it isn't going to change? But I think Singh is secure. I think they saw enough of an upswing near the end of the election. Like, he was generating a lot of positive energy, a lot of youthful energy. And if there's a sound strategy out of NDP headquarters, that's a big if, by the way, then maybe they could capitalize on youth excitement and youth engagement working towards the next election. Again, that's a big if. This is the NDP we're talking about. But
yeah,
it's not outside the realm of possibility that if you know, Trudeau has been more or less sight unseen in the last week.
That's yes.
Right. He's not even doing the usual photo op, doing trick or treating with the kids this year. So, you know, Trudeau won the day, but he did not come out of it unscathed. Like, he's hurting right now, and if he continues to hurt, if he doesn't learn the lessons of the election, and they're not the lessons that the rest of the media has been talking about, and we'll get to that in a minute. But if he has not learned the lessons of this election, people on the left are going to be looking more and more seriously at who else they can put their votes to. Elizabeth May has been talking about this election might have been her last. She's also talking about maybe being Speaker of the House.
And that would be a good way to end her career, would be to do Speaker for a couple of years, assuming the minority isn't going to last the full shot. And then she retires on a high note. And who was it she floated like way long ago? Was Jody Wilson-Raybould?
Yeah.
She went to her and said, do you want to be the leader of the Greens? To which presumably she said no. But obviously when you say something like that, that's you're already working on your exit strategy.
Yeah,
right?
That is the exit strategy, is looking for who else could take your place. And, you know, if you're a leader, you can sort of, you know, engineer who's the best person to take your place. Otherwise you get a gong show with 13 rounds of voting.
They start their own party and it fails miserably.
Yeah. Exactly.
We'll get to that too, I guess.
I made no notes about Maxime Bernier, and I'm fine with that.
Other than he got smoked,
which we mentioned on election night. So I'm fine with not dealing with Mad Max ever again. The thing with me is, yeah, I think you're right. The minority parliament is kind of her time. Like, the cards are sort of aligned because, you know, the Green Party's always, well, like, we need to be more friendly. Not friendly, but we need to be more respectful in the House. No jeering, no leering, no catcalling, no none of that stuff.
No fun.
And if she wants to, like, let's see what she does with power. Give her the speakership, or let her run for the speakership and, I guess, let the House members decide. But, you know, let her bring the hammer down on some of this BS, like, applauding every time Scheer, you know, burps.
Former speaker, yeah.
Or, you know, whenever, you know, Trudeau gives a non-answer, you know, let her make the rules of the House, enforce the rules of the House, and see what happens. And maybe that's the best thing she could probably do for her party right now. It's like, see, look what happens when you give
a green
some authority.
And to her credit, supposedly she knows the parliamentary procedure inside out.
Well, she's been like, she's like one parliamentarian of the year for
yes,
every year for years. So.
Because when somebody, you know, if you know the book that well,
yeah,
you probably should get a shot at speaker. I would imagine if that's your future. Plus, the other parties, considering it's a minority situation, you need all of your players, and I suppose the Greens do too. But since they're really only three.
Mm-hmm.
Then It's a strong possibility. I wouldn't put it past.
Well, they don't have the balance of responsibility, which is the line they're always using. So,
and it's not as if it's a 1 or 2 seat gap, but that's that's something that Trudeau is going to need to deal with. Is that who are going to be the friends, right? Who is it? The assumption, and I suppose we, at least I did on election night as well, was that it was going to be the NDP, but that's not necessarily the case. Trudeau came out a couple of days after the election and said, no, you know what, no formal allegiance. And of course, that harkens back to what I'm going to call the Curry example, which we talked about on when Christopher Curry joined us and talked at length about 1972, the minority of 1972. There's a lot of similarities. That was Trudeau the senior won a minority government of, I think it was 2 seats in the end, but he also chose a very strong House leader, Alan McEachern, which is a name, if you've followed politics at all in the past 100 years, you'll know. And he cultivated a good working relationship with the NDP and was, you know, they were friendly. And a lot of what happened was behind the scenes rather than being a formal arrangement, kind of like they have in BC, actually, the NDP and the Greens. It's more of they call it, I think they officially call it a case-by-case basis. And when you have a setup like that, it's entirely possible that other parties will support you. And in this, well, I was going to say famous, but the minority situation of 1972, which ran for 2 years, and I think that's why they put the 2 years label on most minorities. There were times where I think it was Stanfield, the Stanfield conservatives of the time, on occasion supported the Liberals in legislation as well. And that's exactly how case by case works. It's we're going to work through these things and you will support them when you do. And hopefully there aren't too many. If it gets to the point where everything's being brought forward as a confidence motion, then the odds of the government collapsing are much stronger. So if you lose a vote on a confidence, generally the government is done. Usually budgetary or something high profile. It's usually the budget, but it can be anything can be labeled a confidence motion if I understand it right.
Well, I mean, I think there are limitations to what can be a confidence motion. Like the approval of the minutes can't be a confidence motion.
No.
Or a motion to adjourn can't be a confidence motion.
We need the wheel of parliamentary procedure.
I think what's clear is, with very, very, very select circumstances, the Conservative Party is not going to vote with the Liberals on absolutely anything. And you see that from sort of like the messaging, like, hey, we got the biggest opposition in history. And like, that's the victory margin. It's like, we really won. We came in second, but it was the biggest second place you've ever freaking seen.
We're number two.
We're number one at number two. Right. It's, you know, that it's silly, but I mean, they're really just electioneering. And Andrew Scheer on election night said, like, we are the government in waiting. Blah, blah. He didn't do that, but he might as well have.
Yeah, and he probably would be the leader of the government in waiting.
I think he should have. I think.
Blah, blah, blah.
Because it can only help him at this point.
It couldn't have hurt.
There's no personality there.
I think he should have played it more like nerd dad, but of course, instead we got this. And if I understand it right, it's a perception among conservatives as well, is that
he's not cool.
He's not cool, but he's all. I mean, you can be not cool and be prime minister like Stephen Harper. But what Stephen Harper had to do and did do was pulled back on the ideological stuff.
Stephen Harper was great at not being cool.
But he tried, though, you know, sipping a little Molson's and playing Help from My Friends on the Piano. You know, that really helped him
a lot. That's not cool. No, that's definitely not cool. But
that's the thing, though, is that we're a bit more forgiving with, say, the nerd dad rather than somebody who's trying really hard and isn't accomplishing it. But
yeah.
And I think this is the critique and the criticism of Scheer, and it's not unfair, is that, you know, refuses to go to a pride march, doesn't account for his views on abortion. He doesn't even really want to talk about it. It's just like, oh, it's a personal thing. It's like, you need to clarify where you're going with that. So, and if people aren't going to accept that, then they're never, ever going to accept you as the leader of the country. And those few percentage of votes where you need people, it's like, well, I think I can live with this guy.
I'll circle around back to that in a second. But yeah. The thing is, with propping up the government, the NDP, I think, with the Liberals, form just a couple of ticks shy of a majority. So, by and large, it is going to be all eyes on the Bloc.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Like, what is the Bloc going to do? What is their intention? And, you know, that's going to be tough. Like, do they want to have a say in sort of governing? Is there policy they want passed? Or are they kind of the Quebec umbrage party still? you know, is I'm not sure what the goal is. And maybe that's the short-sightedness of us here in English Canada, that we didn't pay more attention to Blanchard during the election, and you know, maybe that coverage wasn't there because we were too busy with other things. But yeah,
well, I have to say, I mean, I'm trying real hard, and I watched a bit of the French feed to try not just to get a feel of what was going on, but to, you know, to get that perspective, because the only way you're going to get the Quebec perspective is to watch Quebec media, because it is, if you've spent any time there or watch even Radio Canada, it is almost, as far as Canada goes, can be a completely different universe of media there.
Mm.
What they cover, what they talk about. And Blanchard said that he's, you know, there. It sounds like he's willing to work with the Liberals on things, obviously, that benefit Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And his it's not even a line in the sand, but the short version is, if it's to the benefit of Quebec or if it's something that we agree with, in the grander scheme of things, then we'll go along with it. And obviously, if it isn't, let's say, take the pipeline, for example.
Mm-hmm.
As far as he's concerned, no pipeline.
No pipeline.
And even though in some respects they are very conservative, Bill 21 and the support of that kind of stuff. I'm not sure how they feel about the new means that's coming along.
It's getting murkier by the minute.
That's because of the nature of that party. There is that provincial-federal overlap, right? Because most of the time, provincial issues don't manifest themselves as solidly in Ottawa as they do with the Bloc because, well, they've got Quebec in their name. So that's something that remains to be seen. And again, as I'd said about Trudeau and the Liberals looking for friends, it's quite possible that the Bloc is going to be some of the friends that mm-hmm. they need,
mm-hmm.
possibly even the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
They need to find friends where they can find them.
Right. And this is
obviously the NDP, right?
Yeah, and this plays into, I mean, what kind of, not just specifically about Andrew Scheer, but more generally about the Conservatives. Because one of the things that has been talked about, and I can't remember where this op-ed was, but they talked about, like, climate change is basically what derailed Scheer. I mean, yeah, it was all the, like, it was the social justice, the social policy stuff that what did Andy McKay hang like a stinking albatross?
Which Peter McKay.
Peter McKay. Who did I say? Andy McKay.
Andy McKay. Oh, that Andy McKay, such a kidder.
This has been a bad
day. You're right.
Day.
He's been using these old, like the old tired metaphors too. So,
but
he's pleasing the old tired metaphor
social,
crowd. Yeah.
The social stuff is valid, but climate change is what's killing. It's kind of what's killing Ford too. Like the whole thing about, and we'll get to Ford in a second, but the whole fact that he's still on about
carbon tax,
court challenge, still the freaking stickers, you know, that stuff doesn't look good because 2/3 of the electorate are saying, hey, this is a problem. And the vast majority, maybe not the vast majority, but a solid chunk of that 2/3 is like, we're not doing freaking enough. And already we've had one protest with 27 people. I can't remember the name of the group that had like the protest in the house that like occupied the house and were arrested.
I think they may have been part of Extinction Rebellion, right? Or at least affiliates. Climate change.
Climate Action Now or something.
Activists.
Yeah.
Of some description.
And that stuff isn't going to go away.
No.
And the thing is, if you are a minority Liberal government and you've got something that you need to pass, like a budget, and you're going to need assistance, what can the NDP, Bloc, and the Greens all agree to push you on? Well, all those parties agree that climate change, there's not enough being done about climate change. So the Conservatives are in a real dilemma because that's the one issue all the parties can agree on and do something about. And there are a lot of people in the Liberal Party who feel, will tell you on the down low that the stuff they've gone for is too moderate, and they want to push harder too. And so maybe with another whole section of the House at their backs, maybe that is the shove they need. And that's bad news for the Conservatives, especially since they will agree there's a problem, but won't agree that the most practical ways to go about solving it really do anything. Also, shout out to Steve Dick, Green Party candidate in the last election. He's listening to the show.
Yeah, I was by his office there and saw the for lease sign. It's kind of sad when the election's over and the offices are abandoned, because there was so much activity there in all of them, I guess, and then in most of them anyway.
They're
the
so
ones
busy
that ran
for weeks, and then
and then it's yeah, yeah. It's I hope they documented well what went on there, and I guess that's everybody's taking notes to try to figure out how they can do better the next time and continuously as well. And I guess we should probably talk about the Bloc Redneck Qua, the Wexit gang, and the disgruntled people out west, because that's another significant story to come out of the election that is not going to go away.
No.
The blue map of the west, particularly Alberta and Saskatchewan, with some little hints of other colors, but generally...
Well, I think what... I want to get this off my chest, but it ticked me
Let
off last week. After the election, we get like three solid days of, what's Trudeau going to do to appeal to the West? Like, what's he going to do? You can't do nothing. Like, what can he appoint Nishni Nenshi to something? And it's like, okay, how about this? Andrew Scheer didn't lead the Conservatives to win one seat in Newfoundland or PEI, and he didn't win one seat in Toronto, in Mississauga, in Brampton, and in Kitchener-Waterloo, the Tri-Cities area, which the Conservatives have all won before. Mm-hmm. What's up? What can Andy Scheer do to reach out to these people? No one asked. I mean, until like the weekend when you had Sarah, I think her name was Sarah McIntyre, who is the Harper's former press secretary, said so like she's fed up with having a leader who won't march in pride parades. Yes. I can't remember how many times Harper marched in a pride parade, but I digress. But I did find this. The 60 electoral districts with the highest population density in Canada, Conservatives won
0.9.
In the places where your neighbor is three cows and an ox, the Conservatives cleaned up. But in the places where your neighbors are 300 people in the same apartment complex, that's a dicier situation.
Yes, and I think part of that, and we're going to get to it in the second half, obviously, is that Doug Ford's name was a bit of an epithet, to the point where I think there was one speech where Trudeau used it 12 or 14 times.
I've seen the supercuts.
It's kind of like the, yes, it was like Doug Ford. I think that went a long way to crush them in the urban centers. But then, of course, there is the West where, and I mentioned this on election night too, and I think it was a great line where one they did a street and a woman said, they could put a Conservative sign on a hay bale and it would win, because that's how they roll out there. And we have to respect that. Obviously, it's not everybody. And of course, every time we get a result like this, it's like, we should go to proportional representation. And then it's clear that one of the great myths of the West is that absolutely everybody is a Conservative.
Sure, yeah.
Even the people that vote NDP are Conservative. And maybe they are to some degree, and that's fine. But then there's this, the movement, let's say, that's emerging, which sounds like there was an article in Vice talking about the people who founded VoteWexit.com.
Yep, yep.
And it sounds like they are actually drawn from the far right conspiracy gang, right?
Yeah, the one guy, King, he goes on Facebook and posts about racist conspiracy theories, talking about, and this is a direct quote, depopulation of the Anglo-Saxon race, which isn't a race.
Ooh.
But I mean, that's straight out of the white genocide, mm-hmm. Playbook.
Without question.
So, I mean, if you're someone who legitimately thinks that Alberta is getting a raw deal and maybe it would be better suited to like go off on its own as its own independent country or whatever, well, the guys who are speaking for you are trash. Sorry, they're trash. And that's going to be tricky. I mean, it's going to be really tricky in the east part of the country to hear about Western outrage and Western dissatisfaction when, like, the people leading them are, you know, one tablecloth away from a white hood.
Sorry, I'm laughing, but yes, you're right.
You know, these are the people speaking on your behalf? No thanks, because we thought, you know, it was 2019 and we weren't listening to those guys anymore.
But the trolling is also coming from, let's say, inside the house as well. Did you see Scott Moe's freak out?
Yeah.
Like the day after the election, he did this whole, like, this government's got a lack of direction, they got a lack of respect for industry and creating wealth, and he just went on and on and on. Brian Palliser, Conservative Premier of Manitoba, took a bit of a step back, and he said, I don't really have any thoughts on separation.
Brian Palliser was great, yeah.
Yeah, he's probably in Costa Rica or wherever his condo is, but or his cabana is. But of course, then there's Jason Kenney, who right out of the gate was like, I don't want to let Justin Trudeau push us out of the country, wink. Like, he's busy saying, no, we want everybody to get along. I think Doug Ford is doing a better job at that. But Jason Kenney's doing this whole having it both ways thing. And, of course, now they're focusing on equalization. It's like,
well, that's
and the way they're playing it is like, we're just, it is totally. It's like, we're giving all this money to Ottawa and they're giving us nothing back, which isn't really how equalization payments work. We don't really have enough time to get into it, but it's not as if.
Well, it doesn't work anyway because oil and gas is 10% of the GDP.
Yes. But also, I mean, Ottawa gives money to all provinces, including Alberta. Alberta is getting federal money. They make it sound like, we give all this money to Ottawa, and they don't give us anything back.
Right.
And now it was breaking news this afternoon about Encana leaving Calgary and moving to the States. I don't know all of the reasons yet, but of course, this is going to be another thing that they're going to point to and say, it's Trudeau's fault that they're moving to the States.
Well, I mean, last week they had the Alberta budget too, and they give, you know, several million dollars to Husky. So a couple of weeks after Husky said, we're laying off people. It's like, well, why are you giving them millions of dollars when they're not investing in local workers? And we don't have enough time to get into the Alberta budget either, but I will just note there were a lot of tax credits for emerging industries like digital, like agri-tech, things like that are kind of like representative of the new economy that Kenney and the Conservatives cut. The UCP, I guess I should say technically. They cut off these tax credits, put all their chips back in oil and gas. And I don't know if that was largely because they thought Scheer was going to win and because he was going to be able to, you know, put all his chips on oil and gas.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I understand that there are a lot of people who are hurting in Alberta and, you know, want to get back to work. But, you know, this isn't a political thing where it's the Trudeau government is working against you. It's a market thing where the market is working against you.
That's exactly.
You're not helping your workers either by tying off education, by tying off those grants, or tying off tax credits to emerging businesses who are also going to leave you anyway. Now that, you know, you can't compete, are you going to open a tech firm in Calgary? Are you going to open it in Toronto or Kitchener-Waterloo where the tax credits are sort of more generous? It's really a no-brainer, and it's sad.
Once again, you've done a fantastic job of tying all that up, so I have nothing to add. Other than that, I'm surprised that they haven't called the current Liberal minority the illegitimate government of...
Oh, my goodness.
That's to come, right? That's to follow. It's like, they're not really the government. They're minority.
Well, that'll...
It's coming. Well, coming soon.
It'll probably happen after the throne speech.
We are going to have so much to talk about in the next forever.
yes.
At least a year. Possibly two.
So we're going to take a quick break and come back with You Know Who. You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And all that glitters isn't gold.
And that's a first for Open Sources Guelph. That was from our digital music library, The Specials, a band from a lot of years ago that some of you will remember and many of you will not. The album is called Encore, and that song is called Vote For Me. So talk about fitting perfectly into, like, pretty much everything that we talk about all the time. 24/7.
Yeah, I guess.
Absolutely.
Okay. Happening today, a couple of hours ago, well, actually more than a couple hours ago, the House voted to undertake a formal impeachment inquiry. That is the House of Representatives in the United States, the lower house. The vote was 232 to 196. There were four people who did not, who were not present to vote, and I believe there are two vacancies as well in the House right now. So overwhelmingly, but also right across party lines, although there were two Democrats who defected to join Republicans to vote no, Jeff Van Drew of New Jersey and Colin Peterson of Minnesota. They are in traditionally red sort of voting areas, so it was seen as sort of a strategic vote for them. But game on.
Yeah, and they probably did it knowing that it wouldn't make a difference because the, you know, obviously overwhelming majority was.
Yeah.
Not overwhelming, no, but a very high majority, because it was only a margin of, what, 30-something seats. But
yes,
they knew that they knew exactly where this was going
to
lie.
I think it's closer to 40, actually. But, I mean, I heard one Republican on one of the networks, I think it was yesterday, saying, oh, Nancy Pelosi is playing a political trick. She doesn't have the votes. And it's like, dude, Nancy Pelosi has the votes. Nancy Pelosi doesn't do blank without knowing blank. And fill in the word blank with what you think it is.
She's been in the game a long time.
Yeah, she's a game day player. She's not going to call for a vote unless she knows it's a vote she's going to win. Come on.
Unlike Trump, who's just going to go to Twitter and scream. it started off earlier in the week with, well, or was it prior to that, the calling his these proceedings a lynching?
So, that was last week.
So inappropriate. Yeah. And of course, Lindsey Graham chimed in on that.
I know that all lynching, well. And I should know. No. I'm from South Carolina.
and he defended him on it, but he was one of the ones, he had put something before the House, is like, okay, let's, what was it again? It was like trying to legitimize the impeachment proceedings as well. Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about Lindsey Graham. but he replaced with Strom Thurmond. Do you want to talk about boots to fill? Jeez, Strom Thurmond.
Right.
Holy cow. Trump obviously was hoping for a bit of a Baghdadi bump.
so
but
to speak.
It sounds like he's more interested in the dog. And I have a soft spot for dogs that are in the military and then the cops. So I sort of like this story, but then there was like a faked picture.
It was
a Photoshop picture of
him giving like the Congressional Medal of Honor to the dog.
The dog whose ID can't, or sex can't be revealed.
Yeah, the dog.
Even though
is
its
still
name
in,
is Conan or something.
The dog is still in the combat zone, and he might
be at risk.
He might fall prey to Cat ISIS. I can't remember who did that joke.
I guess I shouldn't laugh because it is really serious. But and one of the reports I read that it was like a robot. Well, I want to know more about the robot that went after Baghdadi. Obviously, it didn't get out. And sadly, you know, obviously some children were blown up as well. So that really shouldn't make light of anything here because it's not a good news story. Well, it's a good news story that the leader of ISIS is gone, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, no one really is going to argue that that's a sad thing. But it is sad that, you know, people's family members and that who haven't done anything get caught up in these things.
Well, the problematic part, and if you listen to people who know about things like national security, number one thing is that fact that withdrawal from Syria was putting the success of this plan in danger. So his like sort of last minute sort of like, yeah, we'll abandon Syria, whatever.
And everybody went, whoa,
it could have cost,
wait,
you know, this mission to get rid of al-Baghdadi. And then the second part is like, what do you do now? You know, is there a plan? And we know that Donald Trump isn't the guy who plans things. And what this did seem to be was like, yeah, again, what you said, it's a good thing Baghdadi's gone.
Yeah, no one's going to cry.
But part of this does seem like when Donald Trump comes out and says like, oh, he's way worse than Osama bin Laden. And you know, when you see the picture from the Situation Room that they did and
with
the
all
Sunday
the wires.
Morning. Yeah,
I noticed that right away. And then somebody else is like, what's with all the cables? Like,
yeah. And then the Sunday morning address that he does, like, come on. And the timing, too. It's like, you know what? Are you trying to have your bin Laden moment? Is that what this is? Is this more political theater? You couldn't do it with the, you know, missile strike on Syria in 17, so now you're going to do this. Like, there's just this, like, icky political tinge whenever he does something good. It's just, like, covered in this gross partisan mayonnaise of aren't I the greatest?
Rather than it being a bit organic like that, the picture of them in the Situation Room when Bin Laden was getting smoked, a little bit different. But yeah, and it's most of the commentary, including from the some of the Syrian Defense Forces. I'm not sure if it was the Peshmerga, saying that, you know, this operation succeeded in spite of Trump, not because of him.
Right.
Especially, as you said, like to do with them pulling out. And of course, shamelessly, but we know this is why the story became about oil. We've secured the oil.
Right.
And supposedly that in a war zone, that can be considered a violation of the Geneva Convention. It's like they're just...
You're taking somebody else's property.
He's openly admitting, rather than, you know, not talking about it, is that they're doing it to secure the resources that are there, which is a gross violation of all of the rules of conflict, which, you know, tend to get thrown out the window in a situation like this that is such a, I won't use an S show, let's say, with so much going on. But, you know, we've got the oil. He even has trouble saying oil. Like, it's like, oh my God. But, you know, it's, we heard lots about the beautiful, talented, and wonderful dog.
Oh, and then lots about how al-Baghdadi died like a dog, cried
like
a
dog. Yeah, how does he know? But he did say watching the raid was like a movie. And I was thinking,
which is so gross.
Secretly, they just showed a movie, like any movie or something, you know.
Yeah, they showed him Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty or something from Netflix that was just the equivalent, and he actually thought it was...
If we hear about,
was whimpering like a dog because it was actually like...
If we hear about Jessica Chastain getting some kind of medal in the next couple of weeks, we'll know. Not that she doesn't deserve it.
Love her so much. But anyway, that's a sideline.
But for other
stuff. I've seen all of her movies.
But yeah, it just had this like gross... typical Trump tinge to it. And like even the guys at the Pentagon were like, we have absolutely no idea where he got this from. And it's just like, is there any, I mean, we know there's kind of nobody in charge to sort of rein in like this bad behavior anymore.
No.
Uncharacteristically or unpresidential behavior, shall we say. It's just gross.
I was going to say a phrase I noticed this week, and you probably have. I keep seeing it over and over again as somebody who's a never Trumper.
And it seems human to be scum.
Yeah. It seems to be the people going back to the impeachment, anybody that was on side or part of the administration that is going against Trump, and there's going to be more of them since now that the impeachment proceedings are official, is a never Trumper. Which is, I think, is gonna be a phrase we're gonna hear more and more in the next weeks to come.
Well, it's not just like he's attacking people like this fellow Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who is a decorated officer, Purple Heart recipient, veteran of the Iraq War.
No bone spurs, right? Yeah.
But who, you know, has kind of become a key witness in the whole impeachment investigation. Certainly the most probably damning so far, because he was the first person to be deposed who was on the call. Of course, lines up with everything that has been reported so far and likely discussed in depth in these closed-door hearings. But, you know, his statement, he talks about how he tried to report, you know, this. He tried to correct the transcript with, the proper references to, like, recordings of Biden and stuff was left out. But, you know, it's also come down to this bizarre, like, what's a quid pro quo? You can't say it was a quid pro quo because literally no one in the transcript uses the words quid pro quo. And it's like, well, no. Yeah. Like, Donald Trump didn't go on the call. Okay, Volodymyr Zelensky, here's my quid pro quo to you. But it's very clearly, like, when Zelensky says, like, hey, what about those missiles? And Trump goes, oh, you want missiles, eh? Well, maybe you can do me a favor. That's a quid pro quo. Sorry, just because he doesn't use the magic words, which, of course, like, Republicans for years have been obsessed with magic words, like Islamic terror, extremist terror.
Witch
and
hunt.
Stuff. Witch hunt. Like, yeah, it's so
they
silly.
Thrive on stuff like that. Snowflake. You know, it just becomes all about if we can reduce it down to a catchphrase. And Trump lives for them, and, of course, his supporters do, too. That's what he runs on.
Yeah,
that's his
meme
fuel.
Warfare.
That's his...
Yeah.
Because it works well on TV. I've had them.
Yeah.
It's like you're fired.
Yeah.
Evolves into this. Let's just keep saying quid pro quo. And I'm sure you had to look it up. I'm sure most people had to look it up before they knew what the hell it was.
Well, Trump probably prefers the expression tit for tat. and then giggles yes. when hearing tit. But
I love that phrase.
Let's talk about Doug Ford.
Speaking of quit, no.
Well, you know what? It hasn't been a bad week for Doug Ford. The legislature sat for the first time in about 5 weeks. Doug Ford was actually doing rounds of media beforehand, talking about how it's going to be a brand new day, and he's looking forward to getting back to the legislature.
I love you guys.
And we're going to lead. We're going to lead the country, and it's going to be awesome. And
awesome.
It hasn't been terrible. On Wednesday or Tuesday, I think, Toronto City Council, I should say, passed the agreement. They ratified their end of the agreement for the new transit strategy, which means the Ontario line will go forward. I have to say, I wonder how this is going to be received on the federal level, because I was at a transit debate with Adam Vaughan, and there was at least a five-minute pile drive about how the Ontario line was a stupid idea. But
if somebody's going to cough up the dosh for it, then it's going to happen, right? Even
right.
if it's not necessarily the best thing from, what is it, Ontario Place, the Ontario Science Center?
Yeah.
All things labeled Ontario are in Ontario Street.
Hence Ontario Line, and all things that were popular in the 80s when Doug Ford was a kid. It's kind of silly, but I do wonder if Toronto City Council just like, you know what, we'll freaking pass it because it's going to be 10 years
give
before
us the
this,
money.
You know, like, he'll be gone by then and it doesn't matter, which, I mean, solid strategy, but it still sets back transit another couple of years until someone else comes along with another plan, or maybe reverting back to something like Transit City, for example. And, you know, the plan that was fully costed and funded and ready to go with shovels in the ground until Rob Ford tore it up.
Killed it up, yeah.
Which was also about 10 years ago now. So
if they can stop doing that kind of stuff, then maybe.
Yeah.
But we'll see. But yeah, the one I noticed it right away, and he was the first sitting of the House who set up with a softball question from his own Stan Cho, who's like a new guy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing this spiel about, you know, working across party lines, everything you mentioned already. But what I noticed, no standing ovation.
Which,
it would have been,
yeah.
at one point, that would have been the standing ovation moment where everybody, now they all clapped, but they didn't stand up 18 times or whatever it was. And I don't know if some of that is to do with the new era. Some of that is probably to do with Chief of Staff Dean French is gone because supposedly he was the brains.
Also, Arnott sent a letter in the summer saying to cut that crap out, basically.
Yeah, they finally all rebelled. And I wonder if, name escapes me, the electrician. Oh, boy.
The electrician?
Yeah, he's an electrician by trade. His name will come to me before the end of the show. Who was kicked out
for
complaining. Randy Hillier.
Yes.
Randy Hillier. I wonder if he's going to come back into the fold. We don't know, but it doesn't matter. Something else I wanted, this is a bit of a sidebar that happened at Queen's Park. I wanted to mention the tribute to the young journalist, Yusra Yavid. I don't know if you heard this story. He's 21 years old and died I think it was some kind of, I wouldn't say genetic condition, but something.
Right.
Anyway, died at a very young age, and that was unusual, I think, but to hear them doing a shout-out to a journalist in the House, particularly one that was so young. So I don't know if that's part of the change of tone as well, because there is that bit of I'm not sure if he's changed, Doug Ford, and of course his brother Pryor, and both of them, the hate-on that they have for journalists in general, particularly the Toronto Star. People like us, wink, people like us. So I'm wondering if this is a bit of a softening. I mean, this is kind of unusual circumstances, but I thought that was pretty touching that they had a moment of silence for her. And, it's too bad somebody's, because she was supposedly somebody that was asking a lot of the tough questions and things that people want to do, but haven't necessarily been doing because Ontario News Now or whoever.
Yeah.
Is running the show. So a bit of a sidebar there, but wondering if this is part of the new openness that's going to come out of Queen's Park. I doubt it for some reason, but there's an inkling there that maybe there's a bit of a change on the horizon. If we go down with our lovely community campus media passes, will we actually get behind the gates? We don't know, but we're sure as heck going to try.
Right. No, it's interesting because... There has been a put our best foot forward, which has been refreshing. On the other hand, we're still digging into the climate, the carbon tax court challenge, which is like, if you want to like start from scratch and like try to build a new relationship, you might want to stop attacking the current government's most significant piece of domestic legislation. You know, maybe the stupid stickers. Part of this was sort of egged on by the chief of staff of one of the liberal MPs who posted on Twitter, like, yeah, I just ripped off my 100th sticker off the gas pump.
What, you broke the law?
Which, man. I mean, and then, you know, which is red meat to some of these people who want to pick those kinds of fights. And it's like, why are you, you know, why would you do that? You know, because the stickers were kind of coming off on their own. Mm-hmm. But,
all this rain will probably just level
no doubt.
The rest of them.
And then, you know, some of it too, because it does seem like they have turned over a new leaf. The thing last Friday with Stephen Clark saying, hey, guess what, everybody? We're not going to like force amalgamation on you. I mean, the cut, there's still like cuts coming. There still might be some like stuff people don't like coming. They received the report that's saying, hey, your autism funding program was stupid and is actually causing more problems than they're solving. But they took that in stride. I don't know.
It's raining olive branches at this point.
It's raining. That's
the olive tree's been chopped down and has fallen on the entire province.
That's good, actually. But yeah, so it just makes you wonder, like, has a lesson been learned? It still sticks in my craw. I mean, and, you know, maybe after the Saskatchewan case against the carbon tax is coming in January, if I remember correctly. So maybe if when right, the same, yeah. maybe when the Supreme Court swats that down, maybe like,
which they will.
Well, yeah, the most definitely will. I mean, then maybe Doug Ford can go, oh, well, I tried. And, you know, maybe that would appease the base. But, you know, in the meantime, maybe there's hopeful optimism that this is a change.
A bit. I still think it's going to be a bit raucous, particularly.
Oh, it will definitely be.
Particularly with the teachers who are out.
Teachers, yes.
In full force on Monday. It was a protest right away at Queen's Park. Great brass band, by the way. They sounded excellent. I watched a bit of it on, I think it was City or whatever it was going, CB24, and the giant Doug Ford puppet. So.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
no guillotine, which was nice.
No guillotine. That's right. It was billed as numerous labor groups. So it was very, you know, peaceful, and they said their thing. And then on Tuesday, it was the anti-vaxxers, Vaccine Choice Canada.
Cool.
What are they challenging? The Immunization of School Pupils Act. And they were overseen by the ghosts of generations of dead children. But that's another. We'll probably talk about that at a future date if anything happens with it, which it probably won't. Just vaccinate your damn kids and get a flu shot too if you can find one. But that's a public service announcement from me in this chair. Just take all the vaccines.
It was a real heritage.
Do all the vaccines.
Moment. Vaccinate your damn kids.
Eat a bunch
kids.
Of chocolate tonight and get vaccinated tomorrow for all the stuff. Where was
cool.
that going?
I have no idea where you were going after
there
that.
There was an announcement by the minister. I missed his name too. Their name.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Ministry of Small Business and Red Tape Reduction. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I never knew that. I was like, well, that definitely wins for the dumbest portfolio name at any level of government.
Well, I mean, it
plays it was something to do with the getting into college degrees here. Probably involves.
First of all, it's an associate minister.
Staying in your underwear and.
It's an associate minister under the Ministry of Economic Development, Job Creation, and Trade.
Oh, okay. So it's not a.
And the name of the associate cabinet. Minister is Prabhmeet. Sarkaria.
Thanks for that, because I dropped that part. I just saw the brief press release about the announcement making it easier to get a degree by cutting red tape. So I don't know if does that also mean cutting classes and cutting funding and cutting whatever and just
well, I mean,
20 questions on
that's the tricky part because
line and
when
you get
see,
a degree.
When you see these enacted on a practical level, this came up at the budget meeting here in Guelph last week. The GRCA, Grand River Conservation Authority, who oversees the rivers in Guelph Lake, you know, they're waiting for what is a definition of core service because earlier this year, the Ministry of Environment said you're only going to get funding for core services at the conservation authorities. It's November. Everyone's drawing up their – well, it'll be tomorrow. But everyone's drawing up their budget. Nobody knows what core services means. We're still waiting for what – the regulations and the things are going to be for the community benefits charges, which, by the way, is sort of what the capital budgets of the municipalities across the province are dependent on. So you have finance departments like working with as conservatively as possible, trying to figure out what mm-hmm. money they're going to have to do what.
Small C conservatively.
And it's not like there's $16 billion in infrastructure backlog in the province. So it's, you know, on a practical level, this kind of stuff, like we're going to find efficiencies, we're going to cut, you know, red tape. It's like, that sounds great, but what does that mean?
Yeah, because if you don't know what a core service is, I mean, if it's not flood control, then I mean, you can't guess. There's things that need to be done. You could see them cutting back on something like trail maintenance, maybe.
Well, education, GRCA says
finding,
will be the big one. So, like,
you know,
the
Lyme ticks, but yeah, it's
the nature centers will be the first to go.
Yeah, they'll just be boarded up or whatever. And,
but it's you know, they're
or maybe done up for glamping to make money. Who knows? But it's speculative. It's all speculation, and that's the problem. It's like you need to lay it out and say, what is core service?
Let me just wrap up by saying we went to Guelph Lake for my niece's birthday in September.
Nice. Yeah.
There's already a lot of glamping going on out there.
Oh, yeah.
That is it for this week's show. So you can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, which has a bit of a new look, so check that out.
Looking good.
Find us on our Facebook page at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can listen to the show again by downloading it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or by using your favorite podcast app at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Boo to Me at the top of the hour here on CFR Boo 93.3 FM, CFRBoo.ca. No, it's CFRU.ca. I shouldn't screw around with the website
address. No, today
address.
It's Boo.
Yeah, go Google that. Open. Anyway, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources. And I can't spook that up, so we'll see you then.